We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny on the Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Means a lot. We're sponsored exclusively by the law firm Kondorian Murad.
We love those guys. We encourage you.
You need to turn on your mic.
My mic is on.
Okay.
It wasn't working right there.
Something wasn't happening.
The blue light was on. That's all I know. When that blue light goes, I go. Exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Kondorian Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Let's talk college football, and let's look ahead to what I believe will be the official kickoff to the fall. The official kickoff to the football season, so to speak. And that is noon this Saturday when number one Texas plays number three Ohio State and the college football season officially gets going. Because I know they had a week zero. I think they had a week one half and then a week 0.46 was like Akron against somebody. Danny Cannell is on the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Danny, welcome back on the show. We love talking college ball with you. How are you, man?
I appreciate you guys for having me on, man. It's great to catch up. I'm a little disappointed you're not fired up for some of the Thursday and Friday night action, but the point is still the same, and you guys are right. That Ohio State game has been, Texas game has been circled on everybody's calendars. The minute that game last year went final in the playoffs with Ohio State knocking them off, that has been one that people have been anticipating again. So I agree with you. That is going to be an insane atmosphere.
Oh, don't get us wrong. We'll watch those other games, too. We'll get back to those. But, yeah, those are appetizers. And I'm an appetizer guy. I like wings. I like mozzarella sticks. But the entree here, the steak and the potatoes, is noon on Saturday. And Danny Cannell joins us courtesy of Bet Online, looking ahead to the game with us. So preview it for us. What do you expect to see in one of the most anticipated season kickoffs that we've seen in a long, long time?
Boy, I tell you, it's hard to predict a lot of these week zero games because there's so many question marks, right? I mean, they're both teams are breaking in new quarterbacks, and I know we've seen a little bit about Arch Manning. We've seen him play a little bit. Julian Sand for Ohio State, we haven't seen at all. And more importantly for Ohio State, they have both new offensive and defensive coordinators, Matt Patricia. It's taken over the defense. You got Brian Hartline, who's been a longtime assistant coach. Finally, he's getting the call along the, you know, to make the offensive play calls. You've got an entirely new backfield for Ohio State. You've got new pieces for Texas across the board as well. So I think you could see a little bit more of a sloppier affair. I would say even maybe a little bit more of a defensive affair. But even when I say that out loud, I look at these two offensive minds because Steve Sarkisian is a great offensive mind. And I think about Ohio State and Ryan Day and Jeremiah Smith is the most electric player in the country on the offensive side of the ball. It's hard for me to believe it, but I do think this will be a little bit more of a defensive affair early before they kind of have that little chess match of what each defense is going to be trying to do.
So I know, you know, the roster's changed so darn much year to year. I mean, I think, was it 14 players Ohio State, Danny, lost to the draft this past year, including a handful of first rounders. But you mentioned, yep, Smith. That Texas defense last year, wasn't it one catch for 3 yards? And yes. Any of that kind of carry over into this matchup here to start the season?
Yes, absolutely it does. And I think this is where one of those things where I think the stat line can be deceiving, and clearly they did a phenomenal job shutting him down. But as a part of that, maybe they forgot to help with Travion Henderson, who took a 70-yard screen pass. Like, uh-huh, maybe they were so concerned with, you know, stopping the, you know, most, you know, dominant player that we've seen in college football probably in the last 5 or 6 years in Jeremiah Smith. That does provide you opportunities elsewhere. Like Emeka Buka had a pretty good game. Cardale Tate had a good game. And that is where I think probably could be one of the bigger impacts of this game are some of those role players and those new players that aren't the guys that we know. I do think Jeremiah Smith will have a better game. I just think he's one of those guys that you just can't contain that much. I'm sure that game has irked him all offseason long. But I do think you make a great point. I think Texas will be like, all right, we can take that every single time. But that's where some of the other guys have to step up. And that's one of those wrinkles, too. Like, I think Chip Kelly, as the offensive coordinator last year, who's now in the NFL, he was very familiar. All right, he's watching, he's game planning, he's adjusting on the fly in the game. He sees him take away Jeremiah Smith. What does he do? He calls some plays to attack some of the other vulnerabilities in the defense. That's what I'm curious to see, how Brian Hartline adapts to that. But I do have a hunch that Ryan Day will get more involved in the play calling, where he handed it over to Chip Kelly. I think it'll be more of a collaborative effort for Ohio State this season, early in the season especially.
Supposed to be 67 degrees in Columbus at Ohio Stadium. Buckeyes narrowly favored by about a point and a half, depending on where you look, as we get ready to put the ball in the air on Saturday afternoon. It's one of those games where it's early enough in the season that it's not going to be the undoing of either of these teams. Does that ding the importance at all, in your opinion, or no?
Yes and no. Like, you're right. I mean, both of these teams can, you know, you get a mulligan almost, especially when you come into this preseason ranked top five. Like, it's smoked, right? And even then, even if Ohio State, which I don't think is likely, let's say they lose by three touchdowns, 24-3. Let's just throw out a score. Even if they get the rankings, but they have a whole season ahead of them, and they can still get that mulligan that the 12-team playoff does provide, and they have plenty of opportunities left on their schedule to kind of elevate throughout the year and fight their way back into the top 25. I'll give you two examples from last year. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois at home in week three, I think. And maybe it was week two. I forget what week it was. Early in the season, I thought they were toast. I was like, oh, they're done. What did they do? They ran the table, won impressively, got in. Clemson is another team that, you know, struggled early. Georgia, they had a neutral site game, got smoked against Georgia. Didn't look pretty. It looked ugly. People wrote them off. Now, they still have their struggles, and they kind of took the other access point, which is if you win your conference, it doesn't matter what your record is. And if they didn't win the ACC, they would have been left out on the outside, but they ended up winning that game. So there's still a lot of leeway for those teams to bounce back, but you just kind of look at it as a barometer, like a litmus test for your program. How do we stack up against the best? And regardless of whether it matters or not, I know both these fan bases are going to be overreacting one way or another, no matter how the outcome goes for their team.
Our guy Danny Cannell with us here on G&D. One more about this one before we go to the rest of the weekend at large. The quarterback matchup. So Arch Manning, it's a pedigree. There's a name we've value there. I think we've heard an awful lot about that, but you know, not a ton of experience still. I think he had a couple wins against teams that you and I could beat. Now you look at Ohio State, young man stepping in there in terms of saying, how do you see that matchup going? It's a pretty big step up in terms of import.
So I would expect both quarterbacks to be a little bit inconsistent. I think they're going to be harped on so much. And this is what I would tell a young quarterback, and I'm sure both these coaches are telling them, you don't have to do too much. Like, the expectations are off the charts. People think you're going to be the superhero. You're going to throw for 300 yards. They're going to expect that out of an Ohio State or a Texas quarterback anytime, let alone ones that come in with kind of the pedigrees that these two do. I think they might struggle somewhat. It's human nature. It's quarterback nature. When you are young and inexperienced, kind of struggle for it to be a little bit bumpy. I think what will be the difference in this game is which one manages the game the best. Like, there will be little decisions that are made, like when to take a sack versus when to throw it away, when to tuck it and run it versus, you know, whether to air it down the field and take that deep shot down the field. Those are little decisions that over the course of time you build maturity through experience that they don't have any of. So they're going to make some very first-year starter-type mistakes. It's who can minimize those the most. And if that's the situation, I'm going to lean towards Julian Sain for the sole fact that he's playing at home. That is a huge advantage when you think about communication at the line of scrimmage, making checks for the offensive line to communicate amongst each other. They've got to get things on the same page. And then I go on the flip side, Arch Manning, trying to give the cadence, trying to check at the line of scrimmage. For his offensive lineman, they'll probably have to use a silent snap count. So they're having to react to get off the ball in pass protection or in the run game. I just to give a slightest edge to Julian Sain because he's at home in the confines of his own place. But Arch Manning, like you said, at least we've seen him. He's been in Texas for 30 months, so he's been around that system. That's pretty comfortable for him. But I still would give the slight edge to Julian Sain because he's home.
Danny Cannell on Grant and Danny here on the fan. Excuse me. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff win totals, conference Heisman, college football week one lines. I want to pivot to the other of really the huge top 10 games this weekend, and that's LSU Clemson. This is a night game, ABC, 7:30 kickoff on Saturday. Basically, room temperature at kickoff right now, projected to be 73 degrees in Clemson. Is this playoffs or bust kind of for Brian Kelly? These two teams are in a similar spot where they've both few years spinning their tires here. I mean, who needs this season more at this point?
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Oh, I think it's Brian Kelly. I mean, Dabo Swinney has multiple national titles at Clemson, and while they haven't been up to that standard recently, they still did bail out a season last year. I mentioned before about them winning the ACC and getting to the playoffs, and they actually played pretty good against Texas. So I actually feel pretty good about Clemson. I think he's almost one of those lifetime contract things. You know, he can I know college football is very fickle, but I do think Clemson fans appreciate what he's done, and he kind of call his own shots. That is very much not the case for Brian Kelly at LSU. He's had a lot of success, and he's been to the playoffs before, but he hasn't won the national title, and he hasn't had that playoff-type run at LSU just yet. And even to add a little bit more insult to injury, the place that he left because he said he didn't think he could win a national championship there, Marcus Freeman just took them to the national championship game. And while he didn't win it, I think people are looking around saying, man, I thought you said this place was hard to win. And Marcus Freeman in his third year takes him to the national title game. So that combined with LSU is a program which has ran off multiple coaches with national titles to their resume. They ran off Les Miles, and that was after an extended period of time, and they thought it was getting a little bit stale. And then they ran off Ed Orgeron just a couple years after he won a national championship. So you want to talk about a fan base that has off the top expectations, and reasonably so, because they have so much talent coming through that program. I think Brian Kelly, this is a massive year where it does feel, I won't say national championship or bust, but it does feel like they better make the playoffs or it could get uncomfortable in Baton Rouge for him.
Let me sneak in a quick one here. This is one of the biggest lines I can ever remember seeing. Penn State's a 44-point favorite at home. I get that they're pretty good against Nevada. How for real are they this year? It just feels like I hear so much about them every year, and there's always a couple of losses, a couple of buzzsaws in the Big Ten. Doesn't feel like they can get over the hump there. Are they good enough?
I think they are. I mean, you mentioned kind of the narrative about them every year. James Franklin's record against top five opponents is 1-15. Mm. Like, his only win in the one was a hot game against Ohio State that he had, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. So that's even that one's in the rearview mirror. And even last year, I thought that the expanded playoff really did James Franklin a lot of favors because he wouldn't have gotten in last year. And then I'm sure those fans were restless, but they get in. They beat Boise State. They beat SMU. They come up short against Notre Dame, but it gave them a little taste of the postseason life for Penn State fans. So I think they were kind of enthusiastic. The reason I'm buying into Penn State, they're actually my national champion pick. Mm. We're talking about all these teams with question marks. We have a team that actually has answers, and they have answers across the board. They go out, and I know they lost Abdul Carter, but they got denied Dennis Sutton, the defensive edge rusher, who is really a dynamic pass rusher. He should be able to fill those shoes. They go out and get Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator from Ohio State, from the defending national champion. They hire him away. And probably more importantly, they've got several players on the offensive side of the ball that could have gone to the NFL. And much like Michigan 2 years ago, much like Ohio State last year, they all decide collectively as a group, let's come back and try to do something special. And so I feel like they've kind of got this mindset that has worked the last two seasons. And maybe most importantly, and you alluded to it, their schedule is a joke. They have three complete cake. We're not even going to see Penn State play until week four. Mm. Like, they're not going to have, they could roll out their backups if they wanted to, and they'll be 3-0. But, and then even when they get into conference play, they have a couple tricky games, like going to Iowa could get tricky, but it's really a two-game schedule. They get Ohio State on the road, and they get Oregon at home. So So I almost feel like they're a lock to go 10-2 at worst. I have them going 11-1. And I'm a believer that James Franklin has been knocking on the door and knocking on the door. They've been getting closer. And because of all the other questions with all these other teams, I'm going to go with the team that I think has the answers.
Danny, as you know, college football is going to spread from Thursday through Sunday. 4 days of kicking this thing off with Sunday
Monday
night football.
Too.
What do we have Monday?
Monday night is, there's always that Labor Day Monday night game.
That's true.
There?
Yeah, there is a thrown-in game probably that I'm not thinking about.
I think it's TCU-UNC. I think Bill Belichick's debut, I think, is Monday night. I think ESPN even changed that game because
I believe
they want to get
crazy.
All those eyeballs. Whether they're watching Bill or his girlfriend, we don't know. But I think they jumped on that. But yes, it is I love this weekend because it's really, you know, we don't even get it. We used to get it in the bowl season where you'd have the NFL playoffs. There was kind of a dead area and you could really focus. This is really college football's marquee weekend.
But bring up the Sunday slate because you've got Notre Dame, Miami, 6-10. Another nationally televised kick on ABC under the lights. And another game, you were talking about quarterback changes with guys graduating, you know, figuratively, literally, what have you. Well, Notre Dame and Miami are two teams that are, you have the number one overall pick no longer at Miami, and Notre Dame's moving on without a guy that got them to the national championship game last year.
Yep, and this is another one where a lot of question marks. I do feel like Marcus Freeman's roster from top to bottom is probably stronger. I trust him sort of what he's built there for the last couple of years, but that is not to discount Miami because they've been pretty big spenders in the portal. They've got a defense which is pretty nasty, and they went out and got a quarterback from Georgia and Carson Beck, who everybody's cast aside, probably myself included. I still have to see him do it, but he is somebody who a year ago at this time, when we were previewing games this season last year when he was at Georgia, everyone was saying he could win the Heisman Trophy and he was going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. Now, the season kind of unfolded. He struggled with interceptions, had a couple rough losses, and then probably most importantly had elbow surgery. He had, you know, Tommy John surgery on his elbow. So that's a massive question mark. But the guy, from all accounts, he's fully recovered. He's full speed. So he should be good to go. And then Notre Dame does have the returning, probably the best running back in the entire country, and Jeremiah Love, who's a really dynamic back who helped them last year. But they're starting C.J. Carr, who we know nothing about other than he's Lloyd Carr's grandson. Like, that's all we really know about him. He's a very green quarterback. So I think that game is going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game down in Miami. And you talk about programs that need a win. Notre Dame is the favorite in that game, and it's for a reason. But Miami desperately needs to win that game, sort of to recapture some of the moment they took last year and to have sort of that signature win, which they really did lack last year. Even though Cam Ward was so special, they finished the season 10-2, just missed out in the playoffs. They need that signature win playing at home in Miami.
Bring this one up because we're here in D.C. We've got some Virginia Tech alums. I don't expect them to be terrific, but they take on South Carolina, who I think is going to be nasty. Danny, I have all sorts of weaknesses, and one of mine is if I see a documentary that involves somebody, I end up falling in love with that person. So I'm now on the Lenore Sellers Heisman Trophy campaign because I watched the SEC documentary on Netflix. I think that guy's going to be a baller. Preview that game for us and then Sellers the season.
So I totally agree with you. I saw that documentary as well. I thought there were some breakout stars in that one. I thought Lenore Sellers were. I thought Shane Beamer was. Yep. You know, he's out there with his family, taking his kids to school and going to breakfast. I love that personal, you know, I love that when you get to kind of learn it because all we do is like criticize people and, oh, who's going to win, who can't. And you see that personal aspect. You're like, oh, yeah, they're humans too. The Nora Sellers is off the charts. Athleticism, arm talent, size, stature. He's a massive, massive kid that everybody is really high on. My one concern with him, he did lose his offensive coordinator. And I do think it could be a potential downgrade at coordinator. So he's got some new pieces. South Carolina as a group, one of the reasons they had that big year last year was they had a lot of NFL talent. They had a secondary player named Nick Amonwari. They had Kyle Kennard, a defensive end that got drafted. And they still do have Dylan Simpson on the other side of the ball, but there's just some new pieces there. And I was actually a little bit surprised that the number is this tight. Like, I think if you just said perception-wise, look at these two programs, you'd probably say, man, South Carolina is probably a 2-touchdown favorite. The fact that they're not actually makes me kind of like Virginia Tech a little bit in this spot because their quarterback, Kyron Drones, is somebody who's getting a new offensive coordinator, but I think it's an upgrade. And he's somebody, again, a year ago, people were picking Virginia Tech to be this team that could be a surprise in the ACC. They fell well short of expectations. But Brent Pry, their head coach, is a defensive coach. I think the one thing you saw Illinois do in the bowl game was take away Lenora Sellers as a runner. I think that's going to be priority number one to him. And you talk about somebody who's coaching for his, you know, future. It is Brent Pry at Virginia Tech. So I think that game might be closer than people think, because the odds makers are usually way more correct than, you know, the experts, so to speak.
You can see why we love having Danny Cannell on Bet Online. Updated college football playoff win total, conference Heisman Trophy, college football week one lines. They've got it all. We'll let you out on this, and you can take this wherever you want to. But as Danny said, localizing it, we're in the DMV here. We've got Maryland fans. I think about JMU as a huge fan base at this point. And then even the University of Virginia. Anything locally that stands out or you're interested in with any of those programs this year?
Yeah. Can you guys tell me who's going to start for the Terps? Is Malik Washington going to go?
I mean, he'll play this weekend, I think.
Yeah, so I think so too. But I do think, like, Coach Loxley's great. He's a great offensive mind. I think he's got a really good relationship with his quarterbacks. They've got, you know, you guys obviously know about him as a, you know, highly touted freshman that's coming in there. But to start a true freshman is a big decision. Like, if he's ready, I love it. But if he's not, you can also kind of derail his confidence and kind of things can go off the rails. I think that's one of the most important decisions you've seen Mike Loxley have to make in just quarterback development. What do they decide to do? How much do they play him? Do they expose him out there and just say, all right, this is going to be a bumpy year, we're going to roll with him? Or do they try to protect him somewhat? Because I think he's got an insane amount of talent and could be somebody that helps bring back Maryland to that 8 and 9 win total. But I do think this year could be a little bit more of a struggle. And then Virginia, I think they're quietly a team that's been spending a little bit more money. And I do think it's you know, it's much needed. And I'm curious to see, because this is a big year for Tony Elliott, if he can kind of take a step forward and be more competitive in a tougher out in the ACC.
Dan, you're the best, buddy. Always appreciate it, man. Enjoy this weekend.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the games. Always great being on.
Yeah, same with you. There's Danny Cannell. Bet Online made him possible. That game, noon on Saturday, cannot come soon enough.
It's just so perfect.
And now that I know YouTube TV's got a deal with Fox and I'm not going to have to miss it, it could start right now as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, let's say that game didn't exist. It would still be a pretty great weekend. I mean, Alabama's at Florida State. Florida State's probably not going to be great, but still, that's, you know, pretty storied programs, pretty marquee. You mentioned the LSU-Clemson game. We talked Notre Dame and Miami. It's already a pretty good weekend. Now you've got one of the biggest matchups to start a season that I can remember. Phenomenal.
You're just jumping in the car. Big news of the day today. The Chiefs found out that their number one wide receiver, Rashee Rice, accepted a 6-game ban to start the season. So the league wanted him to be out for 10 games. The Chiefs and Rice pushed back and said, that's insane. Let's have a hearing over this. They did. He agreed not to appeal and to take a 6-game suspension. It'll start right away, which means he'll be back for the Commanders game before the Week 8 matchup.
Really good player. And you could see what they wanted to do with him at the beginning of last year. They had to pivot, talking about the Chiefs, where he was getting featured. He was getting targeted, kind of was growing into the role of their true, honest-to-goodness number one. I think that's going to happen at some point this year. How soon he's up to speed? Probably not great for Washington, you know, how quickly he's able to come back and hit the ground running. But I think I saw a story this offseason that he was practicing like he was going to be playing, even though they knew a suspension was coming. I think Andy Reid and company know that this is not really about September and October. It's about November and beyond for a team that's got Super Bowl aspirations.
So this is something real quick I wanted to end the show with. It's never comfortable to talk about this on air when somebody passes who means a lot to this area and to me and to a lot of us in the D.C. media. But a guy who worked for many, many years on our website, thefandc.com, and was a legend in the media room, Rick Snyder, tragically passed away this week. Really, really awful. And this is happening, frankly, far too often with some of our buddies in the media corps. But I first met Rick 26 years ago. I was a 10-year-old kid who was credentialed to go to training camp in Frostburg to cover the Redskins. And at that time, there was kind of a binary for me of people who kind of side-eyed me, like, what in the hell is this kid doing here? And then there were people that kind of got a kick out of it and were really, really nice to me. And Rick was certainly in that latter group. And I don't know that anybody's been more supportive, very few people to me over the years. But just thinking about him kind of last night and over these last couple days, what I've kind of realized is I searched his name in my inbox. Mm-hmm. And he would just send you these quick little 15, 20-word notes about something he saw that he liked. Or, Rick was a bit of a hard ass, something he saw that he didn't like, too. He had no problem doing that. If he was upset at you, you knew it. And he was going to tell you about it. But he's just old school, man. Old school journalist. way before I was around. Like, he kicked butt on the beat for years for the Washington Times, was revered in the media room, and it's just a really unique character that you and I got to know. He's on our show many, many times over the years, but just a good dude and put a lot of work into, you know, making you feel like he was thinking about you. Would just send you these little fun things, whether it was a restaurant he was driving by or, you know, something that was relevant. He would drive through my hometown from time to time. He lived in Southern Maryland. And he would send these things from King George County. But just a tremendous person who meant a lot to a lot of Redskins fans. And you may not even known it, but you were consuming Rick's content over the years. And in some way, I'm sure that meant a lot to him. But thinking about his family and to all of his friends who knew him and were lucky enough to be around him for longer than I was. But I just wanted to before we said goodbye tonight, say that they're in our thoughts.
Yeah, very well put, my friend. I had a teacher many years ago who talked to us about what being a good friend was and friendship. And he was like, it's like tending a garden. And in terms of sometimes it takes painstaking work, sometimes it takes uncomfortable things. And Rick was a great gardener in that way, right? Where, as you said, he'd reach out and share something with you. And you know, I think that was very well put by you. A unique character because, you know, how many guys that are covering the then Redskins, then WFT, then Commanders or whatever, also writing books about presidential beers or giving tours, right. You know, that with intricate and intimate and incredible knowledge of all things D.C., surrounding areas and the like. Just a unique figure and a unique character. And again, I think you said it very well, thinking about his family at this point. But it's hard not to mark that three different icons in sort of the D.C. sports landscape. When you kind of look back at Rick Snyder passing here this week, as you put it, John Feinstein over the summer, and our colleague and friend Pete Methurst as well. Just giants, guys that have been doing this for a really long time that were part of the furniture, that were staples here. Are just the fact that they're no longer around is just kind of hard to believe, man. It's unfathomable.
And in Rick's case, he went from being at practice out there on the sideline next to us one day to not around.
Yeah.
And I have had people pass in my life. I haven't had anything quite like that where it's so sudden and so, oh my God, that just happened kind of thing. It's been jarring. But all I can say is I'm thinking his wife is his high school sweetheart. His two daughters are grown with kids. He talked all the time about them and his grandkids, and just can't stop thinking about, you know, what they're going through. But appreciate you guys giving us 2 minutes. Rick style to end the show today on Grant and Danny. We got a fantasy football draft to get to that we may be late to if traffic is
traffic not doesn't look great.
Going to cooperate with us. So let's go do that over at Pupatella Pizza in Springfield. Overtime comes your way next on The Fan.
I'm Toby Altizer with your sports update on The Fan. This update is presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. In baseball earlier today, the Nationals fell to the Yankees 11-2 with the Yankees hitting 6 home runs, living up to the Bronx Bombers nickname. They were swept by the Yankees and have now lost 5 in a row. They have the day off tomorrow before they take on the Rays on Friday for the first of 3. In the NFL, Terry McLaurin back on the practice field today. Dan Quinn said there's absolutely enough time for him to be ready for Week 1 against the Giants. Some practice squad signings today for the Commanders include Sam Hartman, Ja'Cory Brooks, Chris Moore, defensive linemen Jalen Holmes and Sheldon Day. They also signed running back Donovan Edwards. Also in the NFL, Ravens safety Kyle Hamilton signed a 4-year extension, and Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice is expected to be suspended 6 games. Looking to upgrade your office game? At PVI, we'll come to you to design the perfect office space for your team. No hassle, no stress, just a game-changing upgrade. Hit a grand slam with PVI Office Furniture when you call today to score 15% off your purchase. Get your office in championship shape at PVIPVI.com. From the Crop Medcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm Toby Altizer on The Fan.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.